welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for October 10th. Wow.
Holy smokes.
Holy smokes.
That's Physical Education Day in Japan.
That's right. That's right. That's why it's a national holiday. I'm John Gibson, and with me at Tokyo Dome is Jim Allen. Good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening. We were both here at the same time.
Covering a game.
I know.
Wow.
Is that like the first time since 2008 Japan series, maybe?
Eight Japan series. 2007.
Sabre Lions and Tokyo Dome, and we were here and we were there.
That's right.
Amazing.
So here we are again.
It's like nostalgia.
Right. We watched the Bay Stars and Giants play their second game of their CLCS, and the Giants came away winners. But anyway, on the show, we've got chats with some Bay Stars players. We're going to talk about the CLCS and the PLCS and a little bit more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so game two on Sunday night here, the Giants come back from a 1-0 deficit and they beat the Bay Stars and extend this series to three games. Hisayoshi Chono with a clutch hit in the eighth inning after they walked Shinosuke Abe to pitch to him. It was a pretty good play. I don't have any problems with it. But let's go.
Oh, goodness, we're going to find out what John does have problems with.
Well, no. We're not going to play. We're not going to have that. But let's play the interviews that we talked to some of the players before the game. Jim talked to Alex Ramirez, the first-year skipper of the Bay Stars on Saturday. And so let's just give you a bunch of stars, a cavalcade of stars.
Wow.
Alex Ramirez.
It's a good feeling. I mean, this is this is the first game of the playoff for this team, and especially for me as a manager, I'm very happy to see all of you here today. Today Elian will be starting today. He will be hitting sixth. That was my best choice to use him as second base, hitting sixth.
When it comes to Elian,
second baseman like Ichikawa and also Elian, they both, of course, Ichikawa can do so many things, so many good things. I mean, he can bunt, he can bust and run, he can hit and run, I mean, good things. But if he's not what he's second, then Elian will become the best guy to produce runs. I still gotta believe Sugano is the one who's gonna pitch today.
It seems.
I just say the answer is in the numbers. I never mentioned any names. Guy's idea. It was not my thing. I don't see the reason why we have to hide. We play about 26 games. We face these guys every day, all the time. They face us all the time. We know who's gonna pitch. We did it in the regular season. I don't know the reason why we have to be a secret. Big secret. It's being so into a big secret that I'm even trying to keep it away from my pitching coach. Imagine that. that's our, secret we have to keep. We have to try to keep it away from my pitching coach.
Yeah, of course. I just said today that, this is what a climax series feels like. I want everybody to continue doing the same thing. What you guys did during the season, they brought us here. Don't change anything, just continue. There's nothing to change. Just continue doing the same. Just keep doing what you're doing. We're here for a reason. Let's continue.
Jose Lopez.
How you doing?
All right, man. All right, man. Good luck, man.
Yeah. Does your preparation change any for the postseason at all?
No. Nothing changed.
Okay.
Everything's the same.
All right.
More energy.
Okay. It's more fun?
Yes.
Oh, excellent.
Enjoy more.
Might as well.
Yeah.
Could be, because every day could be the last one. Might as well.
Yeah, because we won, we take the next step.
Okay.
We have to face Hiroshima. If we won Hiroshima, we have to championship.
Good.
Every game now is counting. Way different, like season.
Yeah. Season sometimes feels too long.
Feels too long. Way too long.
With every Monday off. How about that home run last night? How did you feel?
I feel good because...
You look at fastball?
Yeah, because we went in 3-2.
Right.
With my home runs, taking like 4-2. I get more excited to Yamasaki came to the mound, have a two-run lead.
Turned out big.
Yeah.
You looking fastball, you looking up or down?
Doesn't mind, I look at the fastball. I see I swing it. We don't get that many with Sawamura.
Yeah, yeah. Fork balls, right? Yeah, it looks like one.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mike Zagurski.
How would it be to get past the Giants, you know, and move on in the playoffs because of this team's history and everything?
You know, I think it would be great. You know, it's anytime you play a team like the Giants or, you know, especially in the playoffs and you have an opportunity to beat, you know, one of the more prestigious teams in the league, it's a good feeling for, a team that's in their first climax series. So it would be a good step in the right direction for us.
How's your preparation? Now, you guys seem to be very prepared for everything that you guys do, but how is your preparation going into this particular series?
Good. You know, Alex makes it pretty laid back for us. You know, he kind of treats them as the same as they have been and, kind of lets us just go out and play. You know, do what you've done all year and, you know, let's see where it gets us. And, you know, yesterday it worked for us, so hopefully we can get another one today and, you know, head out to Hiroshima.
They talked about yesterday, he was brought up in his pregame press conference that they don't announce the starting pitchers. How big a deal is that for you guys?
You'd have to ask our position players. For me, it doesn't make any difference. I think it's anywhere you see baseball played, it's a little bit of cat and mouse game trying to maybe trick the other team or, you know, keep them guessing on who it's going to be. So, I think we have a pretty good idea who they're going to pitch. I think they have a pretty good idea who we're going to pitch. So, you know, I don't know that we're overly fooling anybody.
Yeah, I don't see the point in it. Yeah. I just didn't get it.
Yeah, it's like I said, cat and mouse, I guess. So I don't, I feel pretty good about where we're at as a team, and our offense has been awfully good all year. And, you know, whoever they throw, regardless, he'll be a good pitcher, and, you know, hopefully we can score enough off him to get a win.
Now, you guys did have a lot of playoff experience coming into this situation here. How did you see your teammates and everything? How did you view them in terms of getting ready for the game? How'd they look?
I would say similar to a regular season game. You know, we were pretty loose. You know,
similar but different.
I would say pretty much the same. I mean, I think it probably helps. We have the best player in the league on our team, and he's pretty laid back, and he knows the task at hand, so it helps. And, you know, Lopez has played in quite a few important games in his career, and, when your big boys are leading the charge, you know, us little guys can kind of follow suit and just kind of take their lead.
Your role here, you expect to go out and have to face particular batters, or are you just expecting to go out and pitch an inning? What did they tell you?
I'm going to go out and pitch whatever he needs me to. If it's one out or five innings or whatever it may be, I'll do what he wants. It's kind of all hands on deck. You know, hopefully Imanaga gives us nine innings and nobody else has to pitch. But, as a group down in that bullpen, we'll be ready. And whenever we're called upon, we'll be up for the task.
We have to edit that last part out yet because they haven't announced the starting pitchers yet.
Exactly. We didn't hear that.
Guillermo Moscoso.
So how did your team get to this point? Now you guys had a really good season.
Man, you know, like everybody say, oh man, you have so many young guys. But from those young guys, they have a good season last year. I mean, we finished last, but they learn. You know, they learn. They know how to play this game. They know they got professional, you know, like between all season. And then, you know, they prove it. Like Kuramoto, Imanaga first year. We got Towashita first year. I mean, to get to this point is a lot, you know. Most in this league, you know, we have a lot of veterans guys. So, you know, I think no matter where we're going, I think people, fans are proud about this thing. And this team promised a lot now in the future, so. I mean, hopefully to stay here, enjoy more time with these guys, and, you know, at some point they're going to get the champion, for sure.
What about Alex Ramirez? What has his role been in making this team better?
I mean, you know, everybody's expecting nothing about him in the beginning of the season, but, you know, he proved already what he can do. You know, he managed the team very well, you know, like plays, pitchers, everybody tells him. He got a great communication with everybody. That's more important. So, you know, he has a lot of success as a ball player. And now he's proven that he allows himself as a manager, so that's good.
Was it the communication or was it his plan that you guys executed? What was the biggest thing that made you guys better?
I mean, both. I think both, you know. And, you know, players came this year with another mentality, and you know, that helped a lot, you know, like pretty much the young guys, and that helped me too. So, I mean, I think everything just come together, and then that's how this team has successful, you know.
I got one question.
Yeah.
Now, you talk about Tobashira. Now, what kind of catcher is he that he, this guy comes up on? You know, he's
He's older, but he's the first year in the league, so everybody thinks, you know, how are we going to work with this guy? Some of these guys have a lot of experience, some of the young guys, but, you know, we have a good coaching catcher.
Yeah.
And he helping a lot every day, you know, spend all day together and, you know, during spring training, he was working hard, you know. He was working hard as a bullpen catcher and everything, trying to meet everyone, you know. And I think he learned quick, really quick. And then now he's an everyday catcher. He has a lot of experience now. He knows everybody's staff, you know, all pitches, even in the minor league system, he knows everybody, so that's good.
Is he good communicating with the pitchers?
Huh? Yeah, he are.
Trust him.
Yeah, I trust him. Yeah.
That's not easy for a rookie.
Not easy. More for when the pitcher like me, Kubo-san and Yamaguchi, a lot of experience. I got this guy. He's come from, you know, rookie ball, whatever. But the guy proved himself. He knows, you know, how to call pitches. You know, that's more important, so you don't have to go there and check too much. I mean, that gives you a lot of trust, you know, so it's good.
It makes you can focus on things you gotta do instead of thinking what's a catcher thinking.
Yeah, you know, I mean, as a pitcher you have to know who's coming back, you know, but I think his job is like, you know who's on turn, you know, who's coming back,
right.
How many hitters is a left field righty coming, you know,
right.
Ahead. So he has a good plan, you know. They're teaching a good plan and you have a lot of success with it.
Okay, well, that's really impressive.
Yeah.
Everybody I've talked to has been so impressed with
that. Yeah, that's right.
All right, well, thanks for getting that from Alex Ramirez. Appreciate that. And, yeah, I like what he said in the pregame before the series started about the pitchers and not naming the pitchers for the CLCS. I think it's ludicrous. It's absurd. We've gone through a whole season where we announced the pitchers, the pitchers for the games, and then all of a sudden, after 26 games, and like unless they're bringing up a rookie from the farm, who they're going to throw, who nobody has any film on, what's the purpose?
Right. Well, the purpose is the Central League being, cantankerous.
Cantankerous.
They're being curmudgeonly. This is how we used to do it in the old days. You young whippersnappers just wouldn't understand, but this is real baseball.
Oh.
Keeping secrets.
Yeah, keeping secrets. All right. Well, there are no secrets, buddy. It's like being married for 30 years, okay?
Okay, let's not go down that road.
There just aren't any more secrets. You can't hide anything. So, you know, I want to see the scouting notes that are going to make a difference before this game, and I don't get it.
I want to give a shout out to Jason Koskri. He was also there on Saturday listening to Alex Ramirez, and he beat me to the punch. I went back to the office, and he went to his computer and typed a story about that, and it was really nice and quick and well done. So good job, Jason.
Good job, Jason.
So
yeah.
Look for that in the Japan Times. He talks about announcing starting pitchers.
Okay, so, you know, they talk about the playoffs and it being a crapshoot, and this crapshoot thing, this aspect of a team can get into the playoffs and all they need to do is get in and they can make a run. I believe that's true, obviously.
To some degree, obviously.
It has happened, but I just don't think, you know, better teams end up losing a lot of times in the playoffs. Now, it happens more often than not, it seems, in Japan. We've had some third-place teams.
One third-place team.
Yeah, knock off those second-place teams in the first stage of the playoffs. They don't always make it to the Japan Series.
Well, they basically never make it to the Japan Series.
Right. It doesn't happen very often, so I understand that. But I think, you know, basically the better teams usually tend to win. So
sure.
This crapshoot thing, it sounds like an excuse to me. I understand that there's, you know, you got some teams that are hot and some players who are maybe on a downswing, others on an upswing. And you also have guys who step up and they just become clutch. You know, there's some guys who, when the pressure's on, they come up big, and some guys who, when the pressure's on, they don't come up so big. And I understand all those things play a role, but I think generally what happens in the regular season is also going to happen in the playoffs. It just, you know, it's a different degree. There's a microscope on everything, but I don't think it changes that much. It's still baseball. Somebody's got to throw a ball over the plate, and somebody's got to hit it.
True enough. I think if there is a difference, it's in the way the teams are made up. I mean, some teams, if your team is, for example, heavy on top line talent, but missing depth, you're probably a good playoff team. you know, if those guys are healthy. Whereas, you know, the team, the deep team that can get you into the playoffs because you can overcome injuries and you got a lot of guys who are not too far below average. The teams that, that rely on depth to get to the playoffs probably are going to struggle more in a short format where nobody cares who your fifth outfielder is.
Right, right. I gotcha. And I agree with that. And I also think, yeah, when you're talking about elite players and top flight players who step up, in the end, somebody has to step up and be that guy who's going to get that big hit. And you need somebody to do that. And all the guys in your lineup have to help in getting to that situation, and then somebody has to come through. So for game one, with this Giants and the Bay Stars, won the game 5-3. They made three home runs. Yeah, we had the Giants take a 2-1 lead in the fifth inning. Then J-Lo comes up with two outs and nobody on, and he gets a harmless single, except for the fact that Yoshitomo Tsutsugo is coming up next, and he blasts one out of the park and puts the Bay Stars up. And they finish the game with three home runs, and they win the game 5-3. And, you know, in that situation, I know Tsutsugo's coming up, and I believe I said on the show last week, it's, a lot in this series is going to depend on how they pitch to Tsutsugo and what they do, and, you know, him being a key. And, you know, I didn't really think the Giants needed to pitch to him in that situation, although you don't want to put the go-ahead run on base with a walk.
Right.
And just walk him. So I think he's got to earn that. But once the count went to 3-1, I don't think you kind of mess with everything.
Right.
I think you make him chase a ball. And the pitch that Miles Michaelis threw kind of was a get-me-over pitch. I didn't really know what it was. I heard somebody say a changeup. I heard somebody else say a wayward forkball. I don't know what it was. It didn't really do very much. And he whacked it out. So I don't know. I just thought that was kind of weird strategy. I also think when in the eighth inning, Shinosuke Abe got a hit and was lifted for a pinch runner.
Right.
And I thought that was a little bit early because he still might need his bat. He would only the tying run. And if you get even, you still need to get ahead somehow. And I thought it was kind of early. So Yoshinobu Takahashi probably pulled the trigger a little bit early on that, in my opinion. But, I mean, I just wouldn't have pulled him in that moment. Maybe if he'd have gotten on second base and there's two outs, then I say, hey, look, if I get a single, I want him to get home. And, you know, maybe at that point. But I just thought it was a little early.
I think that they used the pinch runner when he was on second.
Yes, they did. But there was not two outs.
Okay.
So, and one of the weirdest things I've ever seen in a baseball playoff game ever happened in this game, where the umpire at home plate said play ball, and the pitcher and the catcher decided they were going to throw, and I know you didn't see this play because we talked about it before we started taping, the pitcher and catcher, Mikami and Tawashita of the Bay Stars, decided they were going to throw to second base to try to pick off the runner. And this was Daiki Yoshikawa of the Giants, and they threw, and it was a close play. I saw the replays. I don't know if he was out or not. He certainly could have been called out because of the positioning of the second base umpire, but the second base umpire never even bothered to make a call on the play because he thought play was not in.
Ah.
And you could clearly see the home plate umpire before the
signaling
play ball. And so he never made a call. The umpire was Takanori Yamamoto, and he was the second base umpire. And he just went to sleep. And I think this is weird. It's unforgivable. And I don't know why the home plate umpire didn't come out and say, look, play was in. You need to make a call on it. Was he safe or out? They just kind of met and said, no, he didn't make a call because he didn't think play was in. I thought it was really...
So no call, what they should have flashed on the scoreboard, no call will be made on this play. So just forget it happened.
Yeah, the ball was still dead. So this was weird. I wanted to ask Alex Ramirez about it, but I wasn't able to get here in time today before the game. I thought it was unforgivable for the umpires, at least one umpire out there, to be totally asleep on a play like that. This is a playoff situation. I saw him out here again today, so he didn't get reprimanded in terms of being suspended or anything.
That happens.
But number 41 in your programs, people, watch out for him. He's bad news.
Was it Yamamoto? Oh, he's not my favorite. Yamamoto's famous for calling plate, in my book, famous for calling outs at home plate without tags being made.
All right, well, yeah, the Phantom Tag Man. Well, he's also the ball is dead, and it's not dead, it's live. So.
Well, he's conserving his energy. You know, you only got so much energy in life, and he's not wasting it on trivia. Sure the tag's made.
Tag schmag.
I'm on my coffee break,
you,
man.
You pitcher, throw the ball to home plate. Try that. All right, in game two, the Giants came back from a 1-0 deficit, as I said earlier, and they extend the series to a decisive game three by winning 2-1. Mm-hmm. Chono got his two out single to center in the eighth inning to break the 1-1 tie. And Hayato Sakamoto, CL batting champion, he doubles to open up the game. Now, I think earlier to open up the frame, which I know this is a word that you don't like. He doubles to open up the frame.
I can live with it.
And the Bay Stars were smiling and happy and jovial before the game, but they really couldn't muster very much offense today, and I think that's what eventually cost them. So I'm not really blaming the fact that they pitched to Sakamoto in that particular instance. Mm. And Alex Ramirez talked about it in the presser, post-game presser, saying, you know, you can't walk a guy. He's leading off an inning. You can't just put him on base. I don't know if someone asked him that or if that just came up. I wasn't there from the start of that.
I think it was a case of, do you want to pitch him or pitch around him? Well, pitch carefully to him, but, you know, you got to give a... You got to give the guy a chance. You got to throw a strike.
Well, you
give him a chance to make an out.
You can't give away bases in a tie situation.
No.
I don't think. And so, yeah, you got to make him hit it, and he just happened to hit it off or split the gap in right center.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, walking Abe, I thought, was the smart move, because they don't want a lefty-righty matchup. And they got to Chono, and he didn't. I don't think they needed to start him off with a strike right away. But they tried to get a strike, and he got it off the end of the bat. Now, here's the other thing, is they're playing deep because they want to prevent doubles. It was just a confluence of bad situations for the Bay Stars.
Right. There were, which is on. Now, my thinking on this is kind of mixed, because, first of all, typically in Japan, with two outs and a runner on second. Well, actually, there was a runner on third, excuse me.
Yeah,
there's a runner on third. So they're playing deep. But in Japan, so often with a runner on, they play shallow to keep the runner from scoring. Now, there's no point to play shallow with a guy on third.
Right. You have to play the six-man infield.
Exactly.
That shallow.
Okay, something. But now here's the thing. One of the things I do love about the Bay Stars is they're probably the most aggressive positioning team in NPB. They move their outfielders, they move their infielders probably more than any other team in NPB. So this was typical. You know, sometimes when you're an aggressive hitter, you can go after pitches you shouldn't be swinging at sometimes, because it's one you're looking for and one you think you're going to get. And when you're an aggressive positioning team, sometimes you're going to be out of position.
Mm.
And I think that cost them. Had that been the Giants in the field, it would have been an easy out the center.
Yeah, but I wasn't sure. I obviously, if that winning run or that lead run gets home, you know, that's all you can worry about. But if that second run gets home, then you're really in a big hole. So I kind of understand them playing deep, but I guess I would have played straight away and hope for the best, because you've got a guy out there I think you're pretty confident in. So, you know, let's try to keep the ball down. And if you do, maybe we get the out. And
on the other hand, it's the eighth inning. It's a tie game. Now, they also had the other thing is that their 2, 3, and 4 hitters, their best three hitters, came up in the eighth
inning, which
right.
is something I said.
So basically, they're looking at, they got quite a ways to go in this game, but still, there's only one, but that being said, there's only one more inning to go. So they really want to keep it tied. More, you know, two runs is, anyway, this is my second guessing, but two runs is as good as one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with
when
you.
When you've got the bottom of your order coming up.
I'm with you. I would have played straight away probably.
But anyway, again, I don't fault them for that, because they have a plan, and they it's worked out very well for them over the course of the season. I think this time it's not that it was the wrong plan, but it didn't work out.
Right, and their rookie left-hander, Shota Imanaga, he was brilliant, making his playoff debut. Very stellar performance, seven innings, just the one run allowed. This is playoff baseball.
It was a really good game.
Really good game, and you don't need to make risky decisions in that situation. But I think with the hottest hitter in the lineup and with Sakamoto, he threw a 3-2 hittable pitch, and I just would have made him chase out of the zone. And Sakamoto hits a home run, and with two outs, you know, and the bases empty, I just don't give in that situation. I think they threw him a curveball, it looked like, and it just went right in the middle of the plate. And Sakamoto's good from the middle end, and he raked it out of the park. And that was basically, I mean, Imanaga made other mistakes, they just didn't get hit, but that's the only one that got hit, and that was enough to, I guess, keep him thinking about things after the game, because I would be. He was brilliant otherwise.
He was. I think one of the interesting points for me was that he batted in the top of the seventh after he'd thrown about 98 pitches. And so I asked Alex Ramirez about that, and he said, well, yeah, that was the plan. He was going to, he looked good. And he came out in the bottom of the seventh like, oh, yeah, my manager's got confidence in me. I'll prove him right, because he struck out the last two guys in really dominant fashion. I think he knew that was it, and he wanted to put on a little show. So, unfortunately, that luck didn't hold up for the Bay Stars. Their relief pitching didn't hold up in the eighth, and that was the ball game. But what a great game, and really looking forward to Monday's game, when we will see if the Giants can tie their way to Hiroshima.
Well, yeah, before we get ahead of ourselves here, I picked the Giants to win this series based on talent, but that was not with the knowledge that Tomoyuki Sugano, their ace, would have been under the weather and had not pitched in the first two games. I expect him to pitch tomorrow. We did see him work out before the game yesterday at the park, because he wasn't at the park prior to the start of the series. But on the day of game one on Saturday, he was at the park, and I assume he was here today. I didn't get here in time to see the Giants work out. So, if Sugano's going in game three, he's their ace, and I think the fact that Shun Yamaguchi, the Bay Stars pitcher who probably would have started game one, I think he would have been a great decision for game one, and he's not going to be around, we don't think. So I give the advantage to the Giants, and with a win or a tie, they can advance tomorrow, Monday. Maybe as you're listening to this podcast, the game is going on. So I'm going to stick with my pick, but I would love to see the Bay Stars and Alex Ramirez do it. It would be great. The atmosphere with the Bay Stars fans here, with every strike, with every out, with every hit, was just fantastic.
Yeah, it was interesting. Now I've missed a lot of the big things here this year, but today, because the press box is right in the middle of the third base area, which is the visiting team area here, the visiting team fans area in Tokyo Dome. Now, normally the visiting team fans are limited to the outfield corner, but they were packing, and the Bay Stars fans were a lot of fun to be around, because one of the things they do that most teams' fans don't do, with the exception of the Hanshin Tigers, is when their pitcher is on the mound and they have two strikes, they make an awful lot of noise. This is not proper fan cheering etiquette in Japan.
Yeah, where'd they get that?
I know, the fans are supposed to, when your team is in the field, you're supposed to politely clap and then shut up and not make noise, not to offend the home cheering section.
The other team's band is playing.
That's right. In Japan, cheering is very, etiquette is huge.
Right. So, as we look ahead, I'm assuming the Giants are going to get through. And whether it's the Giants who get through or the Bay Stars, I really like this Hiroshima Carp. They were my team in the Central League from the beginning of the season. I picked the Carp to win the pennant, which they did, and I'm going to pick them to get through. And I'm going to say if it's the Giants and that they get through against if they get through and face the Carp, that the Carp will need three games on the field three wins on the field, let's say, to get through this next series. So I will say four games on the field with the, because we have the one win advantage in the second or the final stage. Mm. So the Carp will start with one victory already. Right. But I think they only need four games to get through if it's the Giants.
Yep. So that would be two wins, a loss, and a tie, even.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, on the field, I said two wins, a loss, and a tie is the same as three wins.
It is indeed. Unless there are two ties, then we go back. Then okay. They're wiped. They cancel each other out. So anyway, enough of the playoff algebra there. I like both of these teams. I think it's just so the series, having the Bay Stars, you know, we've had this, the Central League has been having playoffs since 2007. So this is the 10th year of the Central League having playoffs, and it's the first time the Bay Stars have been here. Boy, is it fun.
Yeah.
It's such a nice change.
It'd be nice to see them get through.
It would indeed. I think I wouldn't be disappointed to see however far they can go.
So, yeah, I like Chris Johnson. I like Yusuke Nomura and Hiroki Kuroda probably starting those first three games, and one of those guys might lose, and then whomever gets that fourth game, I think that's when it ends. And the Bay Stars, you know, if they do get through, I think they're going to have trouble with the starting pitching. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if Yamaguchi can make it back, it'd be a little bit better for them. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have to find out. They're going to have to find another form of offense besides Jose Lopez and Yoshitomo Tsutsugo. I think someone else is going to have to produce on a regular basis, whether it's Kajitani at the top half or Miyazaki on the bottom half. Somebody's going to have to do something to help them produce runs so that they can win, because they're going to give up runs against the Carp, and I would say that's a sweep waiting to happen.
Wow. Well, I can't deny that Hiroshima should be heavy favorites, but you know, that's why they play the game. So I'm really looking forward to those. The Carp have been. The other thing is that the Carp fans have been looking forward to it more than any of us, so it's going to be electric.
Yeah, if it's the Bay Stars and the Carps with these win-starved, championship-starved fans, man, that's a lot of heat.
But you won't be seeing as much blue in Mazda Stadium
Yeah, it's about 40% blue here tonight.
Maybe.
Yeah, as far as we could see.
Yeah, that's right. John was shouting at the umpire, come on, blue, and half the people in the stadium turn their heads.
Yeah, because they don't know what blue means. Who's blue? All right, let's make a two-seam transition and move over to the PLCS and talk about the sweep by the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks. Mm-hmm. Game one, Kodai Senga was a little bit shaky early. He gives up two home runs in the first inning, mm-hmm. but then Seiichi Uchikawa all day, all night, in your face with a bat.
I mean, yeah.
Anyway, three hits, a homer, a double, and a single to lead the way, and the Hawks took a 4-3 victory in the first game. And, you know, the Marines, I thought they had some momentum coming in. I thought they were going to do well, and they did. They did that first inning when Ikuhiro Kiyota hits a home run to start the game, and Alfredo Despaña hits another one, so they have a two-run lead after a half an inning.
Mm.
And then they really couldn't muster much against Senga, and they got a good pitching performance for the most part from Hideaki Wakui.
It was a pretty typical Wakui performance. You know, he didn't allow a lot of runs. He allowed two runs, but he, you know, he gave up a lot of base runners, and he did well. He, you know, he scraped by when he needed to scrape by. So it was prototypical game A from Wakui. That was the good one,
right? And so I think Dennis Arfate comes in the ninth inning and
gave up a home run to Despaña.
He gave up a home run to Despaña, and it was a one-run game. But then he closes it out and gets the save. So they come into game two, and Rick Vandenhert goes for the Hawks.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes six strong innings. He gives up a run in the first inning again. It's Kiyota, our buddy. He hits a home run again for the. This guy is a great postseason player. I think.
He is. It's a shame. What a series he had. It's a shame he didn't hit any more.
Yeah. Especially for the Marines fans. And then Vandenhert six strong. Kenji Akashi and Yuichi Honda drive in runs in back to back innings, and that puts the Hawks in the lead. It was Honda's single in the fifth that gave them a one-run lead, so they were up 2-1. And then Kenta Imamiya again in the eighth inning.
Mm-hmm.
He did the same thing in the first game. He broke the tie.
He's the one who broke the tie with a two-run single.
With a two-run single. So he comes up in the eighth inning of game two and bases loaded again and another two-run single. Same situation except it wasn't a tie score this time. Padded the lead. Sarfati comes on in the ninth and slams the door, and the Marines are gone, and they had a good season. And look, I didn't expect them to do this well. I'm really impressed with what they have going forward. I looked at Hosoya, Kei Hosoya. They played him at first base.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was odd. I mean, same thing with the Giants, going back to Yoshinobu Takahashi, putting Sakamoto in the leadoff spot, not putting Luis Cruz on the roster, shaking things up, doing stuff differently. And I just thought it was not the time to start doing things differently. And I don't know how much I really don't remember Hosoya being at first base that much this year, although I know I saw him over there a few times, but I just didn't think that was the place for him. I mean, I don't know. He didn't hit, so I don't know that we can blame it on that. I mean, you're facing better pitching in the playoffs. I just didn't like the fact that Stomo Ito, the skipper of the Marines, decided to make changes. And it was a disappointing finish for Marines fans. I saw a Michael Jordan crying face on a Marines logo on Twitter. So I know how they feel. They were pretty disappointed.
Wow. Yeah, it was, they were two close games. I mean, there were two close games. The Marines did actually play quite well in Fukuoka this year. Now, Ishikawa has not done well in his career against the Hawks. He did, however, pitch quite well today. The Marines starter on Sunday in Game 2 has not pitched in his career well against SoftBank, but he has pitched very well on long rest, and he had about a month's rest, it seems. He had several weeks' rest.
Yeah.
So he did. He kept him in the game, but the offense went south.
Yeah, unfortunate, but that's the way it goes. I still have a lot of respect for the Marines. They did more than I thought they would, and I butchered my PL predictions, and they were part of the reason. And I'll have to reevaluate in the off season and think about what they're going to do next year, if they can keep Despaigne, and if they bring in some more talent in terms of power. I think they're going to be better than they were this year.
So John,
for sure,
John's going to be doing a little Hansei.
I don't know about
self reflection about low days.
Do reevaluation, any Hansei for me? They play. I really think they overplayed. I think they overperformed.
I think they have for 2 years in a row.
Yeah, I do think so too, and that's what stumps me about the Oryx Buffaloes saying we want more of this Fukuda party that we're on, because he doesn't really bring anything, whereas Tomo Ito seems to be bringing something to the party. But anyway,
okay, so that we should assign John's manager, bring something
to the party. Don't just come empty.
Bring your own beer, at least something.
Yeah,
don't come empty-handed.
Anyway, so looking ahead at the final stage or the second stage of the PLCS. I like the way the Fighters are set up with their pitchers.
Yeah.
I think they can come back on short rest if needed, if the series goes long. But to be honest, I really love the way the Hawks played in Interleague, in that Interleague series against the Carp.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just love to see that series again for all the marbles. So I'm going to go with the Hawks to scratch their way past the Fighters, going the distance to do it and take on the Carp in the Japan series. Since I've been wrong with all my picks so far, why stop here?
Well, and I'll tell you that the Hawks actually played really well in Sapporo Dome this year. I mean, they had a winning record in Sapporo Dome this year. So we'll see how that goes. It's going to be interesting. I think we can adequately say that Shohei Ohtani's ready to pitch.
Yeah, I think so.
After that, after he, he did the job.
And hit.
Yeah, probably going to pitch and hit. And to me, that's, I'm just enamored of this, his whole, the whole aura that he brings to every game that he's in. And I'm really excited to see how they manage his batting and pitching in a short series. So
yeah, as much of it as we can. I would love to see him. To be honest, I like the Fighters. I I would, if I were a fan, I would be rooting for the Fighters, but I just really loved the way the Hawks and Cart played their series in Interleague, and I just want to see a replay of that for in the Japan series on the big stage. I think that would be highly entertaining. The Fighters would bring just as much to the table, I think, but I like the Hawks and that aspect of them going for a three-peat and not getting it.
Okay, so we'll be thinking about John's aspect here, and I think I
get your aspect on out of here.
Move your
aspect over to the side and exactly. Make some room for the other aspects.
Yes, indeed. Well, from my aspect, it's I don't care. I mean, one way or the other. The Fighters. The more I see of Shohei Ohtani, the happier I am. I have the utmost respect for the Hawks. I know they're sort of a juggernaut waiting to happen. I mean, they haven't been the juggernaut this year, except, you know, from March to May. But they are a force to be reckoned with. And it's going to be some fun goings on the next week and a half.
I think so, and we're going to see a lot of Hawks players. I think even today we got a glimpse through the Akashis out there and the Hondas out there.
I thought it was an old-timers game there for a minute.
Yeah, it's a blast from the past.
Well, I love Honda. He's always one of the guys always comes up and says hi on the field. I think once because I talked to him when he was named to the Japan national team, and
right.
He didn't forget that.
Right. All right, so making a four-seam transition, last week I asked for the best moment of the season, and I'll give you mine. It was April 26th at Jingu Stadium. 39-year-old Takahiro Arai of the Hiroshima Carp got his 2,000th hit to become the 47th player to do so. It was a really great moment for a really great guy, and that just stuck in my head. I know it was a long time ago.
It did stick in.
A lot of people.
You can take it out now.
I can take it out. No, it's stuck.
So this proves that things can remain in John's head.
Well, things of insignificance, is that what you're saying? Because important things stick in there. I remember your name.
Hashtag Heidi.
So this rail spike is insignificant. No.
All right, for you.
Yeah. For me, also was a Carp event, and don't ask me the date. It was the day the Carp clinched the pennant.
Okay.
I've for unknown reasons, I'm not a Carp fan. I've rarely been to Hiroshima, but I do have, for accidental reasons, I do have an affinity for the Carp and their history, and that they were one of these teams that never won in their franchise history until 1975. You know, and that was a long time. From the time the team was created before the 1950 season, they went through 25 seasons before they ever won a pennant.
Wow.
Okay, well, here we are. Their last pennant was in 1991, which I happened to be at Game 1 of that Japan series at Seibu Stadium.
Right.
Sitting on the grass in the outfield. And they got beat up pretty good, but that was their last pennant. So it has been, they had 24 years since then. So as long as that first tragic wait, you know, ended in joy, this one was almost as big. Although, you know, it isn't the first time, and you know, it doesn't feel like the first time, but it's pretty darn close.
All right, yeah. So I, you know, the date kind of stuck in my head, and I wanted to check it, and I went to 9/10, and the reason I remembered it was because it was 9/10. It was September 10th.
Oh, okay.
That they clinched at Tokyo Dome by beating the Giants, and Seiya Suzuki had two home runs that night. It was a really great night. So yeah, I asked a number of fans, or I asked you guys last week, and I got a number of responses.
Okay.
So I want to read some. Homanista says the Bay Stars finally clinching a climax series spot against Hiroshima. He said we waited 11 long bad years for the postseason, so they're happy over there.
Well, actually, the Bay Stars have been waiting for the postseason since 1998.
Yeah, I think he's miscalculating, but we won't correct
him.
The Wiz O,
yeah,
says the Hanshin Tigers Kosuke Fukudome hitting for the cycle.
Okay.
I don't remember the date, but I remember that. That was a good night.
Well, how could I forget a cycle?
I know it's one of your favorite things to ride
indeed.
On.
It is indeed.
Bill Thompson says, Ohtani clinching the PL pennant with an absolute gem, the whole performance from start to finish.
Yep.
Pete Duffy says, looking back, it's got to be the envelope fiasco. And this is last year. And I told Pete, I said, unfortunately, we're looking for things from this season. That was last year. It was October. It was close. So
I don't mean to be mean, but it's the draft, man.
Yeah,
it's the draft.
It's the draft too. Yeah,
We're talking about the draft.
We're talking about draft, Mr. Iverson. We're looking for on the field things. So then he came back and he said it was the uniformless Haraguchi, and I don't remember.
Yeah, I remember that
exactly. What
that was memorable.
Yeah. All right, and at Danny, I know who's a Fighters fan, she says, the camera crew putting on helmets every time Nakashima was at bat. I don't remember that game, but I guess he was fouling a lot of balls off into the camera.
I've seen them show the camera crews with their helmets over there, so we've now learned that Nakashima can do things besides sacrifice.
Okay.
He can sacrifice the safety of camera crews.
Right. MPB Reddit said the stinky fish incident at Koshien Stadium with the co-conspirator Valentin, and he had a little smiler.
Oh, good, yes. The
Stuart Mueller, 18.
Co-conspirator. Very nice.
Right. Co-conspirator.
Indeed.
Stuart Mueller, 18. He says Seiya Suzuki hitting walk-off home runs for two nights in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah, those were nice moments. In fact, that was going to be one of my top moments, but because I remember seeing his face that second night on the platform trying to do the interview after the game, and he just didn't really know what to say. He's like, this is deja vu. I could just say everything I said last night because it was the same. But yeah, it was a great moment for him. And then Bex says, Laird's walk-off home run versus the Hawks. And I think that was in that series that they played, obviously, at Sapporo Dome. After they had swept the Hawks down in Fukuoka, then they played the next series in Sapporo Dome, and I think that's when Laird hit the home run. So thank you very much, everyone, for your...
Yeah, good stuff. Thanks for the memories, Viv.
Thanks for the memories. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, the first one comes from our buddy Glenn in Tokyo, and he says, thanks, as always, for the quality pod. And, you know, a lot of people, when they write in the letters, they say thank you very much, and I always skip that part, but once a year, it's nice to hear that and say it on air. So thank you very much for telling us that we're doing okay. We really appreciate
that. Yeah, thanks to all you people who do mention it in emails and, you know, in little comments on Twitter and whatnot. We do appreciate it.
And we're equally willing to read the emails about us being bad, so go ahead and send those in too. But anyway,
stop.
Glenn says, a quick question related to the manager chat from the other day. He said, which managers do you think have done the best and worst in the CL and PL this season? And he gives Alex Ramirez as his best, and his worst, Yoshinobu Takahashi of the Giants.
Hard to, well, I have to think that, Alex is going to get good marks, and I think obviously he's got to compete with Koichi Ogata for that, you know, learning. Both of them obviously learned a lot about managing this year, or in the past year, for Inogata's case. Worst? Yeah, it's hard to, it's really, worst is always hard to evaluate, but... because of the underlying situations. I think, Takahashi has to be a candidate for worst considering the team he has. But to be honest, as much talent as the Giants do have, it's kind of misshapen right now. So I'm not keen to throw him under any bus we might see.
Okay. All right. Keep it moving. Keep that bus going. no accidents here.
Exactly. What are your thoughts?
I really like what Rami Khan did in terms of his approach and preparation. And I think it's, you know, something I said in the prediction show is that we would definitely see the team better prepared this year. And, you know, basically with the same guys, he had some, I would say, adjustments to the pitching staff.
Yep.
But basically the same guys. You took a team that finished last in the CL last year, and he made it a playoff team that's on the verge of going to the second round of the playoffs. So I'm going to give him my nod, and I would give a close second nod to big brother Tomoaki Kanemoto of the Hanshin Tigers, because he did these Jedi mind tricks at the beginning of the season where he said, hey, we're going to have a rebuilding year, but we're also going to compete. And they did that for the most part. I think they did compete, and they were at least competitive for a Central League playoff spot all the way into the last 2 weeks of the season.
Well, I was wrong about Kanemoto in the sense that I thought he would be able to withstand the pressure of being Hanshin manager, because I think he buckled in the mid-season. As I mentioned, the beginning of the season, it was the Tigers' plan not to bunt. They weren't going to sacrifice. And in the first 3 months, I think one of the things that helped make them a team was this positive, forward-looking, you know, we're using young players, we're not giving away outs. And when things just started to tip the wrong way, I think the pressure got really severe, and they went back to, okay, let's give away outs, because that's the Japanese thing to do, and I think that whole plan got lost. So it's hard for me to give him, you know, the underlying plan of using the young players, you know, good, you get high marks for that, but I think also bowing to pressure is not what I expected from him, but I can't criticize somebody, you know, because I haven't been in those shoes, and I think the Tigers is the hottest of the hot seats, so I can't really criticize him for that.
Okay, and then for my worst, I would have to say Motonobu Tanishige of the Dragons, and even though he did well for a time, they couldn't sustain it, and I don't think. Obviously, it didn't help that he eventually got the axe, but I don't think he, and again, I don't think he deserved the axe because they don't really have a lot of talent.
Again, that's the problem.
All these caveats here that I'm throwing in, but I don't think he sparked the team. I don't think he gave it anything new to strive toward. I think it was more of the same, and I think that's why he eventually got kicked out or bounced aside or tossed aside or whatever it was that they're doing, because he wasn't putting the team over the top. And I think the team was competing well early on, but it lost something, I think, in late May, June, and then he got fired. And then obviously we're going to talk about, we have another question about Shige Kazumori, who's taking over.
Shige Kazumori. Well, I think in Tanishige's fairness, I think the thing that happened was that Shuhei Takahashi was really a spark plug for that team early on, and when he got hurt,
that
cost him.
Morty, I don't know what spark he brought, but we'll see. Maybe he brings a glimmer of hope. He's going to do something different. I know he's going to, well, we'll talk about it in a second because we have another question about that. But yeah, I just think Tanishige didn't do anything to spark the team, and that's why he ended up where he ended up, and I think that he was the worst performance. As whatever Takahashi is doing, I think he actually met expectations. I had them finishing about where they finished, about with the number of wins. For me, he didn't do anything plus, minus. He was very neutral, so I wouldn't make him the worst. In the Pacific League, I think Tomo Ito is a guy who deserves a lot of credit. I just said that a second ago, for getting this group into the postseason again. He had some unexpected production from breakout players, including Kei Hosoya. Mm-hmm. His catcher, Tamura, blossomed a little mm-hmm. bit. I think the pitching staff was pretty good. He's not a tactical genius. I don't ever look at some of the things that he does and say, oh, you know, he's breaking ground in Japan, or he's changing the way Japanese managers are approaching the game. I don't see that. But he gets his guys prepared. They get good results. They keep it simple. And he's a good motivator, obviously, and he knows what buttons to push to get a team through a long, long regular season and get it into position to be competitive for a playoff spot. And he has done it every time every year he has been there, basically. Like Jim said earlier, the past 2 years they've overachieved, you know, with the team that I don't think has very good defense at all, but somehow they glove a lot of balls and turn them into outs. They don't get some others, but they pitch their way out of it. It's kind of magical what he does. So he's my guy in the Pacific League.
Well, I think all I'll say is fish out a comment I made during the season, which is the Marine players get consistently good at bats. I think they have consistently good approaches. I think the Hawks are going to do a little better at that. But up and down the lineup, I really like that. He has resurrected a lot of middle relievers, which had been a kind of weak spot for Lotte for several years. So, yeah, they're moving up. They do have a wide, they have a good talent base, and he's doing things with them. Do I have a, I think my top manager in the Pacific League would be the Bunt Master.
Tanabe?
No. Hideki Kuriyama.
Oh, Kuriyama, yeah.
He loves the bunt like nobody loves the bunt in Japan.
Can I have a bunt sandwich with bunt toppings, please?
bunt cake for dessert, baby. Indeed. And lots of red and white and blue striping around the stadium.
Yep. So Glenn also said that Fukuda of the Oryx Buffaloes was his pick for the worst, and that's also my pick for the worst in the Central League, in the Pacific League. Junichi Fukuda, they agreed to bring him back next year, and I remember asking what part of 50 under 500 makes them want to sign up for more, and here they are. Maybe they think So Taguchi, the apparent manager in waiting, is just not ready yet, and they just need a placeholder, and why not? But I don't know if there's a long-term plan. Mm-hmm. Hopefully Jim gets to go to the winter meetings this year, and he bumps into some people with Oryx, involved with Oryx or their front office, and into them hard enough to knock some sense in them.
No, because the guy I talked to at the winter meetings is not the guy who doesn't know anything about baseball, who's Fukuda is his guy. No, I think the reason Fukuda is still the manager is because he is, he was selected by Ryuzo Setoyama, the... I'm not certain of Setoyama's current position. He's a politician guy who's one of the chief executives at Oryx for some reason. And I like Fukuda personally. And because of the problem with Oryx, of trying to win when your front office is basically locked in mortal combat with the rest of the front office is really hard. But I think for me, I can't say Fukuda was a disappointment because I didn't expect anything from him to begin with. I think Norio Tanabe has patently failed to do anything with the talent that Seibu has for them. They have a very good offense. In fact, now Tanabe was a shortstop, but he was a shortstop, an unusual shortstop for the Seibu Lions, which was a defense first team under manager Masaaki Mori during their golden years, and he was an anomalous in that he was a hitter. he was a hitter. He wasn't really a good fielder. He was surrounded by good fielders, but he was the hitter who could make some routine plays and had very little range, and almost that's the team that that's the defensive team that the Lions have, is a team that basically hits.
Yes, we saw a lot of that. I don't know. I didn't think he was inspiring. I thought he was a good leader the first year, and then I didn't see that leadership anymore. And obviously, they can't win games. I think they scored enough runs to win a lot more games. They just couldn't. They couldn't prevent runs because they couldn't catch the ball. So.
Right.
But I don't know if I'm going to blame that on him. And that let's go to our next question because I think that it all ties in here. Our next question is from Coaster Freak, and he sends a high heat question, and he says, "What do you think the new managers Mori and Tsuji bring to the table with their respective clubs for 2017?" And for me, I don't know what we can expect from Tsuji with the Lions, but I'm just assuming, and based on his comments at the press conference, too, when he was hired, that he's going to throw away or look away from whatever some of these guys do at these important defensive positions, for example, second base, shortstop. He's not going to worry about what they do with the bat so much, and he's going to get guys who catch the ball and start there and try to rebuild that defense. And because basically the defense cost them, a playoff position this year. And I think, apparently he was a good double play combination.
He was an outstanding second baseman.
And, I think regardless of the results with the bats, he's going to go with glove guys first and get at least get guys who are regularly out there who catch the ball at you know, up the middle.
Right. I think the Lions actually don't lack the tools. I think one of the things in Japan that's kind of interesting is that there's so many good fielders in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
But teams, or for whatever reasons, because what happens is you'll see teams which focus on their defense and really make a concerted effort to turn it around. They often changing one player, one sort of defensive leader, can really turn around their defense. I think the Bay Stars did it this year, bringing in and making changes right up the middle, shortstop, the center line, shortstop, catcher, center field. I think the Yakult Swallows did that a year ago, bringing in Keiji Obiki.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also, you know, with a lot of effort, with a new coaching staff focusing on defense, I think they focused on other things to their peril this past year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's huge. The teams that do pay a lot of attention. Yeah, the teams that play really good defense tend to be. I mean, my favorite example from a decade ago were the Chunichi Dragons and the Nippon Ham Fighters. Now, the Fighters, everybody thought, the Dragons, everybody thought their pitching was great. Well, they had a great closer, and they had really one good starter. But what they had was they had a tremendous offense, and they had just wonderful defense. So they didn't allow any runs because their defense was so good and they played in the pitcher's park. And then when they went on the road, they outscored the heck out of everybody. I mean, they outscored the heck out of every team they played.
Yep.
And the Fighters was a very similar formula. You know, actually, theirs was more pitching and defense rather than offense. But
under Trey Hillman. Yep.
But those teams that can play the D are the ones that we see there. And it's so easy. It's very ironic because in Japan they can play good defense, but they so often, people don't talk about the defense. They talk about, you know, the guys who hit the home runs, the guys who hit for average. If you go to the Japanese Baseball Hall of Fame and you look for, they have a big fresh, I don't know what you call it, an art object outside with all these baseball players, and you can see how Japan thinks about baseball. There's about 14 players. I think 8 of them are, 7 of them are hitters, 5 of them are pitchers, 1's a fielder, and 1's a runner.
Okay.
So basically, those other things, you know, just hit the ball and pitch the ball, and everything will take care of itself. No, it won't.
Okay. So what do you think Tsuji's
I think
bring?
he's gonna basically bring to the table that focus on defense and not just talk about it. Because he was a star fielder himself, he has a plan for working on the defense. They're gonna think about work on defensive drills, probably practice at a higher speed. You can do things that you need to play good defense, and I think they're going to play better defense. I think they've got the guys who can do it, and he'll select somebody. You know, this is the guy who is not going to hit, but he's going to be the cornerstone of our defense. He's going to be there, somebody who's a quick thinker, got a good arm, a Shinya Miyamoto guy perhaps.
Okay.
So that's interesting there, because I think that's the huge thing for the Lions.
Okay.
How about Shigekazu Mori?
Yeah, for Mori, I read half of his book before I got too busy with other projects, but during the first half of his book, he talks about how guys get ready and how the coaches watch them get ready. So, for example, if a pitcher is supposed to run, let's say, a mile and a half, does he run the mile and a half when people are watching, or does he run a mile when he thinks people are not watching? And so I think he's going to have a keen eye on what guys do and how they get ready. I think he's going to be more Hiromitsu Ochiai, kind of old school, in that he's going to say, hey, these guys are professional. They know what they have to do. If they don't do it, they won't play.
Mm.
And he's going to have the pitchers ready. Obviously, he was a former pitching coach mm-hmm. of the team. He was moved to bench coach, and he's been basically at the helm since Tanishiga was a player manager, because somebody had to run the team when Shiga was in the game. So, I didn't see all that much change in the interim when they were playing under him. I think he also is holding a place until Michihiro Ogasawara is ready to mm-hmm. be the first team manager. But this guy is he's a stickler. He's a tough guy. I think he's going to be more Hoshino than Ochai, in that if his pitchers are not performing, they might have to watch out for a right hook or a left jab or something. I think he's going to be serious about winning, even if he is a placeholder. So who knows? I just think he's going to bring a little bit more toughness to him, and he will make them very accountable.
Well, one of the stories that was going around about Tanishige being fired was basically that he was basically named manager, and as long as he was manager, he had one coach he brought in, and that was it. Everybody else was named by Mori and Ochia. So there was sort of a schism in that team from the beginning. The team ownership wanted, you know, they made Ochai the general manager because they didn't want to just completely push him out. It would be too rude to get rid of him completely. And I think that did not work out very well for the Dragons. They had a split in leadership. Now, with Mori, we'll have a case where he and Ochai are partners. They've been partners for a long, long time. They are on the same wavelength, and I think that's going to be a productive combination for them, just because of the communication thing.
If nothing else.
So, now whether he has managing skill and, you know, people skills, he's excelled at being a head coach under Ochai, who is a guy who, as you said, challenged his coaches to excel. You know, he challenged his coaches to excel, and then the coaches challenged the players to do things else. Ochai had very little, you know, he had a few harsh words for the players, but he wasn't on them. He didn't ride them until he thought they would benefit from a kick in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't really part of his thing. If you were slacking off, you were just as likely to find yourself on another team before he said anything about it.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for the great questions. If you have any other comments or questions for next week's show, send them by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. You can tweet us at #HighHeat, at JBW Podcast, or you can go to our Facebook page and leave us a message there. We'll talk to you next week from wherever.
Thanks for listening.
Enjoy your postseason.